You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me tonight is my newly joined co-host, Matthew Dax. Matthew, how are things coming together for you this week?
Well, after I was joined at the beginning of the week, I gotta tell you, it is hard to figure out who I am. One of my previous hosts was Australian, so that was weird. I keep wanting a pint of bitter and some prawns. And I can't help it. It's just so odd. I had a Scottish one, which was, that's great, because I just drink a lot of scotch and just walk around and be like, I can't do it, Captain. So, it's awkward.
If I'm not mistaken, one of your past hosts also worked as a baseball announcer.
And he's going down the right sideline there, and he's got the ball, and he throws it to second, and he's out! He's out! They win the game! Cubs win! Cubs win! Yeah, it was awkward.
It's so confusing to be a joined species, isn't it?
Yeah. What's really weird is that, of course, a few of my hosts were women, and I can't tell you how awkward that is.
I bet. Well, let's talk today about a woman who is joined. And let's talk about Jadzia Dax. Now, we all know that you really have a thing for Ezri Dax, but I think Jadzia is also one of your favorite characters.
She is. I think, obviously, with the time Deep Space Nine came out, there's always something about pretty girl in a Starfleet uniform. And Terry Farrell playing Jadzia, of course, was that on Deep Space Nine, alongside Kira, obviously. But I think I just really enjoyed her character because of the fun that she was. She was just a very interesting character, and you never knew specifically what was going to come from her because she had so many facets to her. And I think, seriously, that's a great sci-fi idea because you can bring out things in a character that might seem odd for another character. But, you can always explain it. Well, she had a host that did this, and it makes complete sense. Like, I always buy it, I'm never like, that's just too much, So I think that's one of the things that I really liked about that, because it's a great idea for a sci-fi show to have this kind of symbiotic relationship where they're both very smart species who have chosen to join together for the mutual benefit. And I just think that's really cool.
It was an interesting way to present the ideas and explore the issues surrounding how, on an individual basis, the events of our past influence and shape who we are today, and taking it a step further in a science fiction setting of saying, it's not only the decisions that we've made in our own past, whereas you would have to have an older character, who had, 50, 60 years of experiences that shaped who they were. Here we have this young woman who's in her 20s, and we're talking about not just her own personal decisions, but decisions that were made by others that are beyond her control, but definitely shape who she is and even create a lot of quandaries for her about, what is she responsible for in terms of past actions that maybe she didn't even personally have anything to do with. So it was a very interesting and a unique concept in Star Trek, especially having this as a main character that we were going to be able to visit every single week.
Well, and as a human being, we tend to learn from our mistakes. We learn from other people's mistakes, but sometimes we don't. We have other people that we watch make mistakes and we look at them and think, oh, I'll never make that mistake. And then we go do the same exact thing, and so This we see through Janzia very vividly in some senses, that even though you might know better, and you might actually have the experience to know better, either from yourself or from somebody else that you are very close to, you still might fall into the same trap. And I think that's a really interesting idea, all wrapped up in one character. You know, for me personally, it was, I said that I would never do some of the things that I watched my parents do. But then I found myself in the same exact positions. And so it's very interesting to watch this play out. And like you said, somebody who's a young woman, she's beautiful, you wouldn't really expect this. And I think it's one of the funniest lines, you know, when Sisko meets the new Dax for the first time, and he's like, did you tell him, speaking of Dr. Bashir, that you have a worm living inside of you? And she's like, yes, he thinks it's fascinating. But I mean, you just don't really think that this is going to happen, meeting this character for the first time.
Oh, most definitely. And so, well, let's talk about Dax before, well, not Dax, let's talk about Jadzia before she was joined with Dax, and what kind of person she was before that, and then how the joining changed her. Now, you know, we know that Jadzia is very knowledgeable, and she gets a lot of that knowledge from her hosts. I think one thing that is in question when you talk about a Trill, a joined Trill, is how much do the experiences and the knowledge of the past hosts play into the person that we see in the moment? Now, Jadzia went to Starfleet Academy before she was joined, and you know, she mentions about all of the distinctions that she got at the academy, astrophysics, exoarchaeology, zoology, exobiology. And when you hear that, you might think, well, of course, you know, she's got seven past lives of experience inside her. It would be very easy for her. But of course, she did this stuff before she was joined.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's really interesting. And also think that it's one of the things that we don't really remember about her character is just that before she's joined, she's already exemplary as a person. I mean, she's extremely intelligent. And I mean, if you look at these different distinctions she has in different areas, you know, they're not necessarily all connected to each other either. I mean, so she has a wide range of knowledge on a lot of different things. So, I mean, in some ways to me, she rivals somebody like a Spock or a Data with the vast amount that she just knows already without necessarily having been joined. So I think that's really an interesting start for a character that you're going to join, is actually have her be something without the host first.
Right. And you remember in Trials and Tribulations when they go back to the original Enterprise 1701, and she's attracted to Spock, right? Not Kirk.
Exactly. So, she knows she likes the smart guys. She likes the guys with what's got it going on up here as well. Up
right.
In the old
yeah,
noggin.
That's,
so.
That's what I'm saying. But yeah, she was like a kind of a bookworm, a quiet, very studious type.
I see what you did there, bookworm.
She was determined that she was going to be joined at some point. And she was the only member of her family who was ever joined. But she was very, very driven. And I think we see that as much as Jadzia likes to have fun, and she definitely likes to have fun, just think of her trying to pull Kira into the sauna, for example.
Exactly.
But she definitely likes to have fun, but she's a very driven, very serious person as well. And talking about how that changes when you're joined with a symbiont, what we see in Jadzia Dax, I think, is we see that serious side, the drive, the determination, the ability to analyze situations and find solutions quickly. There's a great line, actually, early in the series where Jadzia and Kira are together in a runabout, and Kira asks her if she has a better solution, and she says, I'm the science officer. It's my job to have a better solution. as she thinks that way. But what we see is we see all of that, and then we see the fun that comes in, I think largely from Curzon, but from many of the other past lives as well.
Yeah, one of the things I think is so interesting is that we get somebody who was, as we've seen before in Star Trek, somebody, a bookworm, kind of shy, kind of morph into something different the way Kirk did. And her experience by being joined gives her something that I think probably was inside of her the whole time. It just gives her the freedom to have it come out. And somebody like Curzon's memories really give her that passionate, outgoing, confident nature. She becomes more lively. She has a lot of different interests, obviously, because of her hosts. And I just think that that's something that's really fascinating to think that when we look at ourselves, there are a lot of things that are dormant in us that we don't necessarily let come out. But if we had the right motivation or just the right push, you know, just the right amount of somebody giving us a push, that might come forward. And so I think this is really interesting, again, is it how much that we can learn about like ourselves and human development and what we have from the idea of you know, a joined species like the Trill.
It's also interesting to me how those experiences from the past manifest themselves in the current host, because I feel like the majority of the personality influence that we see and interest influence that we see in Jadzia comes from Curzon, who was the previous host just before Jadzia. Whereas we see other things such as Tobin's background as an engineer and a warp theorist manifest themselves in Jadzia's ability to solve problems from a technical standpoint when she's needed on the station, on the Defiant, and so forth. But Tobin was the second host, and Jadzia's the eighth host. And I think that you see the influence of that experience of Tobin, but it's much more subtle than what we see with Curzon. And then we see little things like Layla, who was the first host, like to always stand with her hands behind her back. And Jadzia does that as well. Of course, that's a very tiny little thing. So it does seem that the experiences perhaps fade over time, as you might expect. But again, we don't know how the, you know, brain chemistry of a symbiont really works. But it seems to always linger anyway. And ultimately, it all comes together to kind of create this very unique individual.
Well, I think one of the neat things is kind of to see how the different hosts' abilities or things that they really enjoyed all kind of start to combine together to make this kind of strange amalgamation into a completely right. new person. You know, so Emini is a gymnast. You know, she's hugely into exercise, keeping her body fit. That's what she did with her life. You know, she even met Dr. McCoy. He had nice hands, we're told. The right. hands of a surgeon. And so, but that mixed with Curzon, who really loved Klingon culture and also Klingon calisthenics. So then you have something that Jadzia then does. She takes both of those things, puts them all together, and creates her own kind of unique exercise routine, making it her own. And I just think that kind of thing is really interesting. You know, she also gets a love, I think, of music, even though she doesn't know it for a while, from Duran. Her love of, you know, having a good time comes from Curzon. And I just think the way that you watch eight lifetimes of experience come together with one person, then to make a completely new person, I think is so interesting. And it gives us a chance then to ask those questions about ourselves. You know, what have we learned from other people? What are the things that, you know, we got from our upbringing? What are the things that we got from people we grew up with? And how has that shaped and formed who I am today? And that's cool.
Right. And then how do we apply that to our interactions with other people? So let's talk about her friendships with those on the station a little bit. I guess a good starting point would just be Sisko, which we already mentioned a little bit, because Sisko and Curzon were close. And it was an interesting twist to bring two people who already knew each other together on the station, except put one of them in about as opposite as you could get, I think, with taking an older man and making him a young woman. But yet the threads of that relationship are still there when Dax and Sisko meet for the first time on the station.
It is very interesting to watch their relationship because they almost don't skip a beat. You know, obviously it is very different for Sisko to, I think, relate to Janzia. Even though there is so much of Curzon in her, she still is young. She is his subordinate. There are things that we watch as their relationship unfolds that, you know, Janzia doesn't know and doesn't necessarily completely understand, even with 8 lifetimes. And she needs that kind of, I always think of them almost as being older brother and younger sister in a lot of ways, I think. Even though he calls her old man.
Yeah, in a way. But on the flip side, Janzia is very much like a confidant to Sisko, though.
Yes.
It's almost in that situation like she's the big sister and he's the little brother.
And it's interesting to watch that relationship go back and forth, kind of depending on what the one person needs at that time, because they can make that switch. You know, most people can't do that. You know, you're always going to relate to somebody on one level. So, you know, my younger sister and I, she's always going to be my little sister. She'll never be able to play the opposite role. But with Sisko and Janzia, they can definitely do that. And I think that's a really interesting dynamic. And I think it makes one of the most unique relationships on Deep Space Nine. Because, two, Janzia gets away with some things that nobody else on the station could.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and Sisko is a lot more like Kirk in this sense, I think, than any of the other captains, in kind of allowing his crew a little bit more freedom. This last week on the Ready Room, you talked about the autonomy that Kirk has as a captain, not, you know, kind of going to Starfleet for everything. And Sisko kind of operates like that out here in the wilderness, especially when Janzia, when she goes after Worf, when she shouldn't, those kind of things. It's a very different type of relationship.
You know, I think that Sisko, I've often said a number of times on different shows that as great of a captain as Picard is, I really don't think that Picard would have been able to command Deep Space Nine because he would be too rigid in the command structure. He would expect everyone to fall in line, act as they should as Starfleet officers. I think Sisko was the perfect captain, a commander at the beginning, captain later, to command in this environment because he seems to have an ability to respect the backgrounds and the ideas of others around him. I mean, he can be forceful. If you remember when Kira went behind his back and called Starfleet command, and you know, he told her, if you ever do that again, I'm going to unleash the Sisko on you, pretty much is what he said there. So he can be that way, but at the same time, you know, when it comes to Kira, he understands her background, he respects her convictions, and he knows that there are going to be those moments where he has to let her be a Bajoran and has to let her pursue what she feels is the most important to her. And the same thing applies here to Dax, I think largely because of the relationship with Curzon, that he understands that, okay, yes, this is Janzia, but it's also Dax. And it's also Curzon. And if you go to something like Blood Oath, you know, he can understand that, well, look, this is very, very important to her. As strange as it may seem, because she's this young woman, she made a commitment. And it's very important for her to see that through. And he's willing to give her that leeway and kind of turn a blind eye. And he does that with many members of the crew. He even does it with O'Brien. You know, with the whole Tusk bit where he dresses him down. But then at the end, he's like, I get it. I know why you did it. Let's just forget about it.
Well, and you can see that close relationship that Dax and Sisko have, especially in the very early part of season 1, during the episode called Dax, and he comes to her aid. And I think that's a great episode. It's a really good episode showing just how close Sisko was to Curzon, but he is aligning himself now with Jandzia. And yes, she's a new friend, but she's going to be a great friend. And, you know, Sisko is probably the most loyal person in Star Trek, I think. You know, we see later what happens when you cross him, you know, if you're Eddington is your name. But somebody like Jandzia, he's completely loyal to, and it's great to see that this closeness that they had before can be brought back together. And I think that also speaks to the idea that, you know, as our friends change and we change as human beings, a lot of times we kind of lose friends along the way. And the ones that can grow and adapt with us are the best. And again, I think this is a great picture of what it means to be human. And the Dax character, Jandzia, gives us this picture. And I think, again, this is really neat sci-fi.
In terms of other close relationships, let's talk about Kira for a moment, because these are two women that on the surface, I think, are very different from one another. And they don't really hit it off all that well in the beginning, but they do come to be quite good friends.
I really liked actually getting to see two strong women get to be friends. I mean, you know, you had that relationship with Beverly and Troy on the Enterprise. It was always kind of stereotypical that they just kind of gossiped and told each other to sleep with people. Yeah.
Kind of stereotypical?
I was trying to be nice. I really like Gates McFadden, so I try not to trash. I just try not to trash Crusher too much, but
well, it's not trashing Gates or
well, that's
Marina.
True. I know.
It's
anyway.
The writing was just stereotypical. Here are two women. This is what we're going to talk about at the time. So,
but what these two really had, I think, the best female relationship in Star Trek. You don't really get two equal females as friends in Star Trek very much. You know, on Voyager, we do have a couple of relationships between females, but it's always you know, a motherly relationship, you know, whether it's Janeway and B'Elanna, Janeway and Seven, Janeway and Kes. I mean, she doesn't get to be equals with anybody, but, you know, Jandzia and Kira are pretty much equals here. And they treat each other as such. And so it has this really great friendship. And in fact, it reminds me a little bit of how Miles and Julian are friends. You know, they don't really love each other at the beginning, but by the end they're super close, you know. And Jandzia's dragging Kira to the holodeck and dressing up in funny hats and princess dresses and taking her to massage parlors and getting her into all kinds of trouble. So
nice hat.
Exactly, probably the best. What, you know, I just knew at that moment that they were going to be something when Worf said nice hat.
What was going through Worf's head? He comes to this station, and here comes Kira and Dax dressed up as princesses. He's like, where have I ended up? What happened?
Well, you know,
to me?
He was on the Enterprise. He's used to people being in the holodeck. I mean, Picard and Data pretending to be all sorts of things. So, I mean, he did have to dress in tights. Worf
That's
did.
True.
So,
you
but know,
he was not
I can't,
a married man about
exactly.
That.
He cannot judge too much.
Well, it's an interesting point here. I never felt that Kira and Jandzia were as close as Miles and Jules were, but they definitely do form this friendship. And I think actually that Jandzia teaches Kira a lot about learning how to enjoy life a little bit more and relax a little bit more. You know, Kira by nature, and it's completely understandable, is wound so tight because of growing up under the occupation and having to fight for the freedom of her world. And she's very hot-headed. And Jandzia is very, as much as she likes to have fun, she's, we talked about in the beginning, her being a bookworm, being very studious. I think she's generally a very calm person, very analytical person. In that sense, she's quite opposite from Kira, especially early on. And I think she is a very important friend for Kira in particular in that relationship, you know, which way does it go? she probably is responsible a lot for Kira's ability to even accept the relationship with Odo later on and relax. And, you know, we see Kira in moments later in the season where she has become a more tempered person, I think, than she was early on. And I think Dax's influence had a lot to do with that.
I think you're right. You know, as we watch the Dax character, if you go back and you watch Deep Space Nine over again, and you, if you're doing a specific rewatch to kind of watch a character, if you were to watch Jinzi, I think she would be one of the characters that has the most impact on the most amount of people in the station in such a good way. And definitely the way that she touches Kira's life is to be able to have her open up and live life. You know, I don't think that Kira would have ever listened to a hologram about her relationships if she hadn't been introduced the idea of, you know, the holodeck and the holosuites with Jinzia. And just the way that Jinzia lived her life, I think, really rubs off on Kira. Because by the end, you know, she is so much more mellow as a character. And I think that influence comes from Jinzia. And I think that's a great statement for the type of character that Jinzia is, that she has this just kind of smoothing effect on people. People kind of rub up against her like a stone being rubbed up against another stone, and you smooth it out. And her character really helps do that to a lot of the other characters on this show. And that's great character writing.
What kind of effect do you think she had on Dr. Bashir? Besides the obvious of adoration.
You know what I think that she teaches Julian is how to pursue a woman, honestly. She is so loving towards him in that she never kind of destroys his confidence. She just slowly teaches him, I think, how to pursue a woman in a way that won't chase her off. You know, they have that great conversation when they're stuck in the turbo lift, and she says, you know, that she kind of misses being chased. But at the beginning, she was having a hard time breathing, you know, because he was so persistent. And I think, especially after that conversation, Julian really begins to change as a character because of what Jinzia has done for him and kind of showing him, look, you know that I like you. You're a great guy. And, you know, obviously we learn later that it would have been him if Worf hadn't come along, because he was the kind of person that she could have spent the rest of her life with. But she has a calming effect on him. She smooths him out. She makes him not so, I think, arrogant and willing to try and show off for people, but just give them himself, you know, just be himself.
Well, she was definitely a challenge for him because he's someone who, because of his genetic enhancement, I think really not only never had to try so hard to succeed, but actually had to pull back a bit at times so as not to draw attention to himself. You know, again, the cases of him intentionally missing questions on exams. But here was a challenge that he couldn't live up to. I mean, he thought, I'm sure, that he could just go in and enamor Jadzia, this young woman, and she was going to be swept away by his intellect and his good looks and his charming personality, as he saw it. And she wasn't. And that made him realize that maybe he hadn't arrived yet. He had a lot of learning and growth to do.
Well, and he, because of that, I think learns a suaveness that comes with being okay with yourself. You know, we talked about, when we talked about Julian having this idea of he really wants to be accepted and loved for not being able to show who he really is all the time. And he learns from her, I think, this ability to come on to a woman in a way that is appropriate and doesn't smother her, but says, yes, I'm a good guy. I'm a good man. I can be a good friend. I could be a good lover. I can be all of these things. And I think he learns it because of the way that she kind of nurtures him, and he doesn't even know it. And I think that's really cool. This is one of the things about Jinzia that's a great character and would make an amazing friend, is because she takes what's good in you and helps nurture it along and make it even better. And she doesn't do it in a way that you feel like you're being taught. She doesn't do it in a way that makes you feel like you're being manipulated. She just does it in a way that encourages you to bring out the best in you. You know, Curzon did that for Sisko, and I think she really took that and made it her own because, you know, she does that for Sisko. She does it for Kira. She does it for Bashir. She does it for somebody like Quark. And it really shows the depth of this character beneath the surface. And I think a lot of people don't, I think they just kind of brush off Jandzia because a lot of her character development and growth is what we're talking about here. And it's not just necessarily easy to see. You have to be watching for it. You have to be looking for it. You have to be analyzing what's happening. But I think, again, it's just good writing. And it's the kind of person that I would want to be my friend. Because if somebody wants to come alongside me and make me a better person, wow, that's, you know, you can't ask for anything better as a friend. Well, what did you think, Chris, as we were talking about some of the people that she knew in her former life that she kind of brings with her, what did you think about the idea of having her be friends with some of the most famous Klingons from the original series, Kor, Koloth, and Kang?
Oh, you know, it's interesting because I'm not a big fan generally of when they connect all these characters together, because I think that Star Trek overdoes the fact that this person knows this person and this person knows that person. Especially in the novels, they overdo it big time. But even on the show at times as well, you know, I feel like, you know, the galaxy is such a large place. It's just unlikely that all these people will know one another. But if they handle it well, I think it can be nice. You know, it can add some depth to the characters. It can help kind of make the history of the Federation, and in this case, relationships between Federation world and the Klingons, more interesting. In the case of this specific one, Blood Oath, I actually did like it. I think what I had a bigger problem with, and it's not really a problem, but just if you think about the relationships, the fact that Kor, Koloth, and Kang were all buddies somehow seemed kind of a little bit odd. You know, it'd be like if Picard and Sisko and Janeway were all buddies in the future. There's some story where the three of them all hang out and talk about this adventure they went on together, which seems unlikely given the, you know, the size of the fleet and the missions and all. But anyway, in terms of Jadzia knowing, or Curzon knowing them, yeah, I thought it was interesting. And I like the fact that they did bring those characters back on DS9. It's funny that DS9 is the show that pays the most homage to the original series, which is something that I think you would never expect. And a lot of fans right. May not even realize.
I personally really love it. Because I like that, again, this Deep Space Nine writing staff likes the original series.
Yeah.
They're not trying to necessarily be different than the original series. In fact, they do a lot of original series things in the show. And I think they really, you know, as we talked about in the very first episode, if you were to take the original series and then skip The Next Generation and go straight to Deep Space Nine, I think you'd see a better through line because of the way the characters and the storylines and the complexities develop.
Yeah. Well, The Next Generation, they were definitely trying to get away from the original series in terms of concept.
I mean, right,
it was
exactly.
An intentional thing. And then DS9, they kind of like, okay, well, we've done it. We've done that. Now let's go back and pick up a few of those things that we loved from the past.
So I loved having her know these guys. And I liked that it was not her, you know, it was obvious her previous host, Curzon, and it really added to that whole sense of that history behind, you know, Star Trek VI kind of era and all that was going on. And, you know, Curzon was heavily involved in all of the things that were going on back then between the Klingons and the Federation. And I think that's really interesting. But also, you know, you said you didn't necessarily like Kor, Koloth, and Kang, you know, knowing each other. But I figured that they kind of knew each other because they're one of the few Klingons from that time period to actually be alive still. And I think that, you know, older Klingons we see kind of stick together because they're not...
But it's not just that they know each other now. It's that they were doing all this stuff together when they were younger. That's the part I'm talking about.
I think that makes sense, but I guess I just let it go because I enjoyed the story.
Oh, well, I let it go too. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't bother me. It's just one of those kind of like, really? It's like, really? They knew each other? They were all on their own ships, but yeah, okay.
Well, I mean, but think about this. You know, Kirk only has how many ships? There's 12 Constitution-class ships. He knows all of those captains, and he knows them really well. You know, the Klingon Empire is about the same size as the Federation, and so there may be only, you know, 7, 8, 10, 12 battlecruisers for the Klingons at that point. And we know that these three guys are all very important. So when I think about it that way, it doesn't make it too hard, because for them, the universe was a lot smaller as well.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's expanded a ton by the Next Generation point. So
yeah, they probably all met, know, like every maybe twice a year for a gawk party.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, just kicking back with some blood wine. So
yeah.
But what I liked about this is the storyline is that it showed that Jenzia was willing to honor her previous host's commitments, even though she did not have to. And I think that showed great fortitude of character for her as a person.
That's a good point. And it's not the only time that that happens. And that is actually one of the things I wanted to discuss was when you're a joined species, you know, what responsibility do you have to honor the commitments of your past hosts or be responsible for the actions of your past hosts? And so right now we're talking about Blood Oath. And it is true that, you know, she feels, I don't know if I want to say she feels obligated, but it's important to her that she honors that oath that Curzon made to Kor King and Koloth to go and get revenge on the albino. And it's something that's completely inappropriate for her to be doing as a Starfleet officer. But yet, it's really important to her because it's a commitment that Curzon made. And she cares about these three Klingons, and she cares about her honor and her commitment.
And I think what it is interesting is that, you know, she has a center. She has a very clear, you know, moral center of what's right, what's wrong, and she follows that. And it might go against something like Starfleet regulations, because as you said, this is not something that she should be doing as a Starfleet officer. But I just think that that's a great picture of what I was talking about earlier, is just what kind of character Jenzia is and what she really brings to all the relationships that she has. And that she is a very loyal, caring person who wants to be there for her friends. And I think that's really, really awesome.
And it's one of the similarities that she has with Worf, and I think maybe one of the reasons that they were attracted to one another. Now, we didn't really talk about the relationship with Worf yet. We'll do that because that's the big one, obviously, at the end. While we're on the topic of this here, you know, another case, you brought up the episode Dax earlier. That's yet another case where she's willing to take responsibility for accept a guilty verdict and accept punishment for the alleged actions of Curzon as a past host, even though she, as Jadzia, had nothing at all to do with it.
Yeah, and I thought this was really interesting because she still has these feelings for this woman, and she does not want to throw this woman or this legacy under the bus. And I don't know if I would have done that necessarily. But the choice she makes here, I think, is so noble. It is good, it's right, and it's above and beyond, I think, what so many other people would do. And again, I think it goes to show, you know, Jenzia as a person, I think, before she's joined, already has these qualities of being a very steadfast, caring, committed person to those in her life. And it's just... I think ramped up when she's joined, and so that when she has these memories, especially from Curzon, who she was very close to by the end.
So you're feeling that it's not the symbiont in this case, but it's actually the person who becomes the host who's driving that desire to honor past obligations?
Yeah, I think so, because I don't think that every single trill would feel like this. In fact, we know that most trills kind of shy away from having anything to do with their former life. But I think the sense of loyalty and obligation that Jandzia has comes from who she was beforehand. Because if we've seen other trills, they don't really want to have anything to do with something that's happened before. And we really see that come up with the idea of Lenara Khan and their relationship. What did you think about that, Chris? Because this was a huge episode for Star Trek.
Yeah, it was a huge episode for Star Trek. And as we talk about it here, I'm trying to remember if this actually came on TV at the time, because when this was on, I was still living in Alabama. And, you know, even in the 90s, the idea of two women kissing on television was the kind of thing that would get the show yanked off television in Alabama. I can remember an episode of, I think it was Ellen's show, that they absolutely refused to air. But I think this one did come on. But I think this was a really clever way to talk about the difference between the feelings of the hosts and the feelings of the symbionts, and also how difficult it is to let go of the past. So we had a situation where it wasn't Jadzia and Lenara, but it was Tarius and Nelani, the previous hosts of these two symbionts, who had actually been married to one another. And, you know, that's an interesting thing in itself, that it's one thing that if you're in love with someone and you're married to them and that relationship ends in divorce, that's one thing. But here we're talking about the fact that we have two people who are married who are both dead now, but the symbionts that were inside them live on. So it's a very different situation in terms of the feelings and the emotions, and like, how do you process the end of that relationship? And suddenly now they are put back together, but of course they're both young women at this point.
And I think what makes it a really interesting episode too is the idea that what's driving them isn't who they are now. They're allowing the previous host to completely take over and override the decisions that they're going to make. You know, Jandzia is even willing to fully commit and go and have a relationship and even be shunned by Trill society to have this relationship. And yet it's because she's allowed an old host to have complete run of who she is instead of being who she is as Jandzia. And I think that's really interesting. And I don't say that in any way to have anything to do with the sexual undertones here about, you know, gay and lesbians and all of that. That has nothing to do with that. I'm just talking purely on the Star Trek level here and the characters.
Right, because they make a point here, and I think it was a good idea to make them both women, because what they're saying is that what is forbidden or frowned upon in Trill society, it isn't that it's two people of the same gender. It's the fact that a relationship of this type between past hosts is something that you shouldn't rekindle in the new hosts. That's just the position of Trill society.
Right. And the main reason is because the idea is to give the symbiont new experiences and a new life to live, so that when it's passed on, it's not like, oh, that was just kind of a replay of a former life. So it's not as, you know, memorable. And the Dax symbiont has had a rich history. And so if Jandzia really does make this decision, she is doing it for some very selfish reasons that aren't even coming from her. They're coming from Tarius. And it just makes a great episode of science fiction, this idea. But what I do think that it gives us a thought of is we each have things in our lives, especially from our pasts, that drive us, or at least used to drive us. And we can allow those to overtake us and kind of have us revert to who we used to be. But it's very dangerous to do that, because we may not get out of that position. And you could be talking about any number of, you know, horrible things, or it could just be, you know, I used to be a smoker. I started smoking again. I've gone back to who I used to be. And so I just think this is a very interesting thing that allows us to think very deeply about who we are at the core as human beings. And it comes from this character. And I don't think a lot of people give her enough credit as a character for what she can make us do when we then start to soul search ourselves.
Yeah, that is a very good point. So while we're talking about relationships, let's go on now and talk about Worf, because this is finally the kind of culmination, I think, for Jadzia, where, you know, a lot of fans were really upset about the whole Worf-Deanna-Troi relationship that kind of came out of nowhere at the end of The Next Generation. I personally was never bothered by it, although I will completely agree that it didn't make any sense. But here, they bring Worf over to Deep Space Nine, and there couldn't possibly have been a better character waiting for him than Jadzia Dax.
You know, I mentioned it before, and I think this is so true. The moment they met, there was a spark. I mean, the moment he says, "Nice hat," and just the way that they both look each other, there, you know immediately that these characters belong together. And it's because I think Michael Dorn and Terry Farrell have some great chemistry on screen.
Oh, definitely. They
just play that up. And I think really in some ways they just make the writers believe that this is going to be a relationship. And it turns out so beautifully. And I can't honestly think of a better relationship in Star Trek. And the only one that could maybe rival it would be Tom and B'Elanna, for just that kind of realism. Because these two characters really do what we hope our marriages will do, which is bring out the best in us. They teach each other things. Worf learns a lot from Jadzia about how to relax, how to just, you know, kind of let go and not be so uptight all the time. I think of the episode where he's taking care of Yoshi because he's trying to prove to her that he can be a good father, and just the way that Worf interacts with Yoshi as a child and playing with him, he is a completely different person as a father figure than he was with Alexander. And that is all due to Jadzia's influence on him. It's just wonderful.
Well, yeah, I mean, he found someone that he could love. You know, sometimes you meet someone and there's just that connection from the very beginning, and you can't really explain the connection. Now, in the case of Jadzia and Worf, some reasons for the connection are kind of obvious. I mean, he's a Klingon. He really believes in honor. She loves Klingon culture, and she also, because of Curzon, believes in honor as well. Maybe she believes in honor herself too, but I think Curzon had a big influence on that. They're kind of perfect for each other. But we talked about, I think previously on here, that Deep Space Nine developed Worf more in a very short time, just a few seasons, than The Next Generation ever did. But I think giving him Jadzia played a really big part in that, because a lot of his motivations in the past were driven just by honor and his desire to be seen as a real Klingon, I think. You know, he grew up on Earth, and a lot of Klingons didn't see him as a real Klingon. He's wearing a Starfleet uniform. I think he always felt he had to prove himself. So he was driven by honor and driven by this desire to be that great Klingon. With Jadzia, then, he found someone who he really loved. And if you see a lot of his actions related to her, a lot of the things that he does are motivated not simply out of Klingon honor anymore, but they are motivated by that deeper connection that he has to Jadzia.
I'm reading this really good book right now, Chris, and it's called I Do and I Don't, and it's a history of marriage in movies. And I have to say, it's probably one of the most fascinating books that I've read in a long time, just looking at the idea of marriage on screen that we see in the film. And there's this really good point in the book that I came across today, which I thought was very fortuitous since we were going to talk about this. And it was, if you're going to have a character married in a movie, you need to make sure that the story that you're going to tell for those characters couldn't happen unless those characters were married. That those characters need to be married for the story to be told. And I think what makes Worf and Jadzia great characters and have a great marriage for the show and just from a story point is that without them being married and without going through the things that they do because they're married, they don't grow the same way as characters. And so I think that using this idea of getting these two together in an actual marriage, you know, not just living together or anything like that, helps grow these characters in a way that you couldn't if you hadn't done that. And I think that that is perfect character writing and knowing exactly where your characters need to go to grow. And, you know, as we talked about before, Worf wouldn't have grown the way he did without Jadzia. But there's something about what happens to Jadzia when Worf comes around. It's like she finally fully embraces all that she is.
Right.
From the moment she meets this Klingon with a bad attitude, she's a different person. Because I feel like all of the pieces of the Dax symbiont and all of who she is kind of fall into place to make this completely new character. And I think that's, I mean, what more could you ask for writing on a show or just from a character or just that somebody that you might fall in love with? Is that you are going to work to make that person better. You're going to be unselfish about it. And they have a beautiful marriage. I mean, they have plenty of fights, obviously. I'm sure some of them are quite violent, you know, because of both of their tempers. You know, they always end up finding a way to come to some sort of compromise. Again, kind of showing, you know, you've been married for a very long time, I know, what it means to have a good marriage. And I like this so much in these two characters.
And it would have been interesting to see what they would have been like after 15 or 20 years of marriage. You know, unfortunately, as soon as it happened for them, it kind of all got ripped away. But it made sense, you know. I mean, their relationship made sense. Probably, like you said, more so than any other relationship that we've seen in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Okay, well, to close things out here, let's talk about one last topic, and that's the legacy of Jadzia. You know, sadly, we lost Jadzia before the end of the series, but what do you feel were her key contributions to the show itself as a character?
You know, one of the things that she does a lot like Quark is she really livens this show up. She is a character that's vivacious. She's overflowing with just kind of a passion for life. And it really shows in a lot of the episodes that she's in that focus on her. But even when she's just kind of in the background, she's always somebody who's just having a great time. She's funny. She makes lots of great jokes. She has pithy comebacks for people. You know, she's sort of snarky, which is a lot of fun. She's gossipy with Kira and just about anybody on the station. So she's kind of the life of the party. She can be hugely serious. She can talk to you about just about anything because obviously we've talked about she's really smart. And she's a practical joker. I mean, I love the fact that she moves Odo's furniture around every once in a while just to kind of tick him off and to see how long it takes for him to notice, which, as we know, it doesn't take Odo very long.
But it is funny that, yeah, she'll go in and move his furniture around.
I can just see like her by cracking centimeters. Up.
Yeah, just a tiny, tiny bit. That's awesome. She does add humor to the show in more subtle ways than, you know, say someone like Quark does. She was important, I think, to easing Sisko into command of the station. Even though she's so young, he needed to have that confidant there. He needed someone who he felt that he could confide in when things were maybe uncertain. Because it was, you know, he didn't want to be there in the beginning to start with. And, you know, it was a very challenging experience to take over that station under those circumstances. And it turns out that Jadzia as Dax was the person who could help give some stability to Sisko there. We've already talked about how she influenced Bashir. Going through and rewatching Deep Space Nine just to watch Jadzia's thread can be an interesting experience because so much of it is subtle, and watching that influence that she had on the crew can give you a whole new way of seeing what happens aboard the station.
Well, and it was very unique too, because this is one of the first times on Star Trek II that we didn't have it be the captain and the first officer being very close, because Kira and Sisko are close, but they're never really close because of him as emissary and her as a believer in the prophets and him as the emissary. But Jadzia and Sisko are extremely close, and it gives them a very interesting dynamic to play with of that platonic friendship between a man and a woman, which we do not see a ton of in Star Trek like this.
Yeah, not this much. I mean, on The Next Generation, we do have Picard and Beverly, but we don't see as much of it.
Yeah.
And it's a very different kind of relationship because with Sisko and Dax, when he was Curzon, you know, they were doing all the guy stuff together.
Right. Well, and I would argue that, honestly, always behind the Picard and Beverly relationship is this sexual tension.
There is,
which
that's
you're not
true.
Getting with Sisko and Dax, which, again, just makes it this very interesting, very dynamic relationship. And again, for Star Trek, very unique. And so I'm really thankful that they stuck with the Dax character. I think it was a little rough at the beginning. They weren't quite sure what to do with her, but they really stuck with her. And I think she found her groove. And by the end, she's a character that I sorely missed when she was gone. I'm a huge fan of Ezri. I love Ezri. But I very much wish that Terry Farrell had decided to stay with the show.
Yeah.
I don't think she did herself a favor by being on Becker. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, Jadzia is how Dax got its groove back, right?
Exactly.
All right. Well, we'll certainly return to the topic of Jadzia many times here on The Orb. There's so much to talk about with the character, but it's been fun discussing, you know, at least some of the highlights of Jadzia and Dax with you today, Matthew. Let's tell everyone where to find us if they'd like to send us a message or, you know, share their thoughts on Jadzia. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send a message to a show and choose The Orb, and that will come to Matthew and me. You can go over to our new forums at trek.fm/forums, where there's a dedicated section just for The Orb, as well as one for Deep Space Nine, and you can talk about the show with us there. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. Now, Matthew, what if people want to look you up personally?
Well, I am around Trek FM. I do the book reviews there on Literary Treks as well with you. And then, of course, if you just can't get enough, and I hope you can't, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02, just tweeting about all sorts of different things. Right now, obviously, I talked about tweeting about the book that I've been reading. Very interesting and fascinating. If you like film, I completely recommend it to you. I mean, go out and get it right now. Don't wait. Do it now.
Don't wait for the translation. Read it now.
Exactly. Where can everyone find you, Chris?
You can find me on Twitter. My username is CBrianJones. That's Brian with a Y. And you can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that username. So look me up, say hello. You can find me elsewhere here on Trek FM every week on The Ready Room with Greg Harbin, where we give a somewhat serious, somewhat humorous rundown of Star Trek news, and then we pick an episode and we go into an in-depth discussion based on the episode. It's not an episode review show per se, but just using episodes as a springboard for discussions, kind of like what we do here on The Orb. And we go through all the series there, starting with TOS, we run all the way through Enterprise, and then we loop back through again. So you can find me there. And of course, as you just mentioned, Matthew, with you on Literary Treks.
Well, we want to thank you for listening, so join us next time as we gaze into the orb.